it's a great opportunity to get yourself on tape, and everybody can't make it here. I mean, we know that. They were told that when they first got in. But make it a tough decision for Brett and myself and personnel guys and coaches. So, and then if you don't make it here, we're going to give you an opportunity to be on tape. We're not holding you back. So you get out there, you perform and perform well. So if you can't make it here, maybe you make it somewhere else.
Andy Reid talking about those players that are fighting for jobs, not necessarily maybe for the Chiefs, but to audition for other teams. That's what preseason is about for some of these players that are on the fringe of trying to make an NFL roster. And the Chiefs will have their final preseason game, their only home preseason game, coming up tomorrow against the Cleveland Browns. And pregame at 11 o'clock, kickoff at noon on your home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas, Z96.3 The Lake. And wide receiver is a pretty big position, although I think the seven are kind of figured out myself. But Andy Reid on the wide receiver battle.
That'll be a tough decision at that spot. The guys are playing well, so we just have to see. We talked to him about special teams, ends up being a big part of it. He might be a good receiver, but if you can't help out on special teams, you got a problem there. So that ends up being a part of the thing.
Yeah, so it's about being multidimensional. Can you play receiver and cover kicks? That's important. That's important on a 53-man roster, especially when you get guys nicked up and injured and banged up throughout the season. So if you're just a receiver but you can't cover kicks, well, then guess what? You're probably not going to make this team. All right?
Or return kicks, right?
Or return kicks, yeah. Which I think we've got that already figured out. But, yeah. Although, I don't know, kick returner. I mean, you got Denerick Prince. Is he going to make the team as a kick returner? He hasn't done anything special in preseason so far. Amir Massette, he's done a nice job returning punts. I don't know if he's returned kickoffs. Maybe he has.
And Richie James has returned punts. I think Marcette,
I don't think Marcette's done kickoff returns. Yeah. I think Richie James is who they want as the punt returner, but sure-handed. We know there were problems last year with Sky Moore, although he came through big in the AFC title game. So, yeah, if you can do something in special teams and be a wide receiver, and then if there's a few injuries, then you can step in and be a fourth or fifth wideout or a sixth wideout on a game day, but the seventh receiver is going to be mainly doing special teams. In some cases, the sixth and seventh receiver, if they're both active on game day, are going to be doing special teams. The only way they're going to be on the field offensively will be because of injury, more than likely.
Yeah, and that's another thing too with what you had last year. You know, Kadarius Toney was the punt returner, and if he's going to be your number one receiver, and if you can avoid him being out there any more than he has to be with his injury history, right? Like,
well, look what they did with Tyreek Hill. He returned punts early in his career, and then all of a sudden he didn't. And then when they were desperate, they would throw him out there.
Yeah, and it's like if you don't have to use Toney to do that, I think it's probably better for everybody.
Yes, and he seems to be made out of glass at times. So, yeah, absolutely. So I think most of the positions are figured out. I don't think there's a lot of drama tomorrow unless for some reason the Chiefs will put somebody ahead of Justin Watson. I don't think there's any way Justin Ross doesn't make this team. And the other guys above him, I think, are solid. Richie James, I think, is, that was somebody that somebody questioned before the season, would he make the team? I think there's no doubt he'll make the team. So I don't think there's that much drama wide receiver as much of the Chiefs are saying, unless there's something I'm overlooking, maybe from a special team standpoint. Maybe there's a wide receiver that's done a great job covering kicks, so they really like what he's done, and so they think there's value there in keeping that guy over another guy. And who knows? Sometimes there's a guy or two that you're a little bit surprised they get cut. You see, there definitely will be some guys come Tuesday, and before that, they're going to be cut from various teams. You're going to say, oh, and the other thing that we haven't even talked about, what if there is a really good receiver / kick returner that is, he's on a team that has already some depth there, and he's cut? The Chiefs could grab a guy, and that could cost somebody else a roster spot on this team that's not even on the team right now.
Yeah.
Something that we have not discussed either. So, wide receiver, to me, I think it's fairly clear, but we shall see. Backup quarterback, some people think that's a battle. I think it'll still be Blaine Gabbert because you paid him the money. I think Bouchel is showing off to see if he can be a backup with another team, and he should go to the Bears because the Bears need a backup quarterback. And Justin Fields is one big hit away from being done. I think that would make some sense. There's a connection there. Ryan Poles, the GM of the Bears, and he's a little bit familiar with Shane Bouchel at Kansas City. And Andy Reid, I'm sure, is going to vouch for Bouchel if, in fact, they don't keep him on the team as a third quarterback, and he may or may not be active on game day. I don't know how it's all going to work, if they can put him on the practice squad or what. But I'm Shane Bouchel. I want a chance to play somewhere. I don't want to be on the practice squad again.
Yeah,
if I'm him, because hey, I'm in my prime and I played well. So, and then I'm sure there's some, you know, small battles in the interior of the defensive line. Offensive line backups seem to be fairly clear. Maybe there's a surprise coming out after tomorrow. I don't know. Maybe tomorrow will help decide that. But I think the Chiefs, for the most part, like we talked about, teams that are really, really good don't have as many positions available to get. And so it's really more about auditioning for other teams tomorrow, would be my imagination. But anywho. So Chiefs-Browns tomorrow, 11 o'clock pregame kickoff at noon. We're going to talk Royals baseball briefly, and then we're going to talk about an outstanding baseball pitcher who is retiring due to injury. What an up-and-down career he had. But don't feel too sorry for him. I'll tell you why. And this came out here just a little bit ago, and I've been talking about this for years. And in fact, we brought this up yesterday on the show, not knowing this was coming out possibly today. But I talked about how Amazon and Apple have a lot of financial capital, that one of them, if they wanted to get involved in sports big time, and Amazon's already involved in sports, Thursday night NFL football and Prime Video, so forth and so on. I said, hey, if maybe one of those companies, ESPN's not exactly kicking butt left and right financially, although they got these big TV deals they got out for college sports. Disney's stock continues to go down a little bit. So Disney owns ABC and ESPN. Maybe Disney'd be interested in selling ESPN. If they did, maybe Amazon would want to buy ESPN. Well, not quite that far, but the report today is Amazon's in talks with Disney about an ESPN streaming partnership. So Amazon gets their foot in the door with ESPN from that standpoint. ESPN is considering charging between $20 and $35 a month for the new streaming service, which could make it the most expensive streaming service in the United States. Now, what we don't know is what's all included in that subscription fee. But ESPN's president said here, and he has not really hidden behind anything here. He's been kind of like Brett Yormark, being fairly blunt and open, said that, you know, within so many years, ESPN's going to be 100% streaming. Like it won't be on TV. It'll be streaming. Like you'll stream it through your TV. You'll have stream, but it'll be through a streaming service, you know, like a Hulu, something like that. Or obviously through Amazon. Which is what they're talking about here. And then if you really want ESPN, you're going to have to pay for it separately. Like right now, you're paying higher tiers with various things because of sports program, entertainment program, so forth and so on. And so that's where this is headed. And he said that basically they're going to be all streaming here in the next few years, if not sooner. And that would be the next step towards that. So if you sit here and you're like, well, how can I get ESPN? My question is going to be, is Amazon the only source that you can get ESPN? And if that's the case, then you're going to find out how many people really value ESPN. Because I think that's a bit of a gamble, if that's in fact what they mean by this. Now, if they're talking about this is going to be better than ESPN Plus, and that there's going to be some of the main stuff will still be available across the board like it is now, but they're going to be like maybe stuff that's on ESPN2, and which is a lot of good games on ESPN2. Maybe that's all strictly tied to Amazon and you'll be part of that subscriber fee. I don't know. There's not a lot of details here, but I will say that if they go the route, and this would be the cleanest route in regards to keeping it as simple as possible, if you just simply say, listen, anything you want on ESPN, you've got to go through Amazon. Now you got to decide if you want SportsCenter, if you want NFL Live, you want Prime NFL Primetime or whatever that is, NBA Today, if you want the talks, guys yelling at each other, you want all the ball games, you know, there. I mean, most people are probably going to pay that, to be honest with you, if it's completely moved over to where it's tied to Amazon 100%. And like, hey, I want to watch the big game between Alabama and Florida on Saturday night. That's not on CBS. ESPN has it at 6 o'clock. I mean, I think people are going to pay it, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you're serious about sports, you're going to have to. I mean, if you don't want to watch, that's what you're going to have to do.
Do you think it would hurt their bottom line a little bit, or do you think it would help their bottom line? Obviously, if they're going to go into this thinking this and doing this, they got to think it's going to help their bottom line. But I do wonder, you know, we talked about this before with people and their consuming habits, that this would be unique and different. But I would guess there'd be some people that may say, you know what, I'm not paying that much. I already pay for, or maybe they dump other stuff. You know, that could be what happens. It's like, you know what, okay, my only thing I'm going to watch is going to be ESPN and through Amazon. I'll pay my fee with Amazon, my Prime membership or whatever it may be. I'll pay that, but then I'm done. I got no other channels I'm going to watch. That's the only one I'm going to worry about. And then I'll watch stuff through Amazon. That's where Amazon benefits. All these shows that come through Amazon, there's movies and TV shows and TV series that are on Amazon, just like Netflix. And next thing you know, people are like, okay, I'm going to go Amazon. I'm going to pay. I'm already paying for Amazon with a Prime membership, possibly. So then I got ESPN here. I'm going to pay extra for ESPN. When I got ESPN, I got everything there. Well, now I'm going to cut the cord on everything else. And I think that could very well happen. And that's where you get into this, in essence, a streaming wars is what we're talking about. And we knew this was going to happen at some point. This is really going to be an interesting venture if, in fact, this goes through between Amazon, Disney, and ESPN. And the next question is, it says ESPN streaming partnership, but at some point will you get more ABC programming, things like that?
Well, here's ESPN. Yeah.
Because it says right now just Disney about ESPN streaming partnership with Amazon. So there's a lot of places and ways this could go, could be constructed.
Yeah, you would hope, like, so your whatever their dollar figure was, $20 to $30 a month, whatever it might be, you would hope that, like, because right now you can do like a ESPN, Disney Plus, Hulu,
right,
like bundle, right? So you would hope that if something like this is happening, if you already have Amazon Prime, maybe you're bundling ESPN, and maybe that's all part of it too. In the end, would be the Disney Plus, and since they're probably all still going to be the same entity, right? And Hulu has the ABC stuff that you're talking
tied,
about, right?
And it all tied together,
and you can have it all maybe just pull the ABC stuff off of Hulu if you don't want to keep a partnership with them and put it on Amazon, and just keep it all together like that.
Or it's just a big bundle, Amazon, Hulu, and ESPN.
Yeah, if you want to keep Hulu involved when you go to Amazon. I don't know what the parameters would be on all that and how that all works, because I know there's other stuff
Disney
like
has
Fox.
Disney has Hulu.
Yeah, so. But if you... Yeah, that'd be interesting to see if they keep Hulu and Amazon. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the point of Hulu if you moved everything
That's
to
what
Prime
I was
now?
Wondering.
And so... I know, because I know there's Fox stuff on Hulu, too. And
there's Hulu originals and stuff, too.
And all that. So it'd be interesting if they would maybe merge, too, right? Mm-hmm. Like Hulu and Amazon Prime video. But listen, I think this is actually, when you get down to it, this is going to be what people have always wanted. They want to pick what they want to watch, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't really do that on cable. You're given this package of this is what you get on your cable package.
Well,
can I just have ESPN
others.
Or can I just have this?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do I have to have all this? Can I get it cheaper if I don't want
But you're still going to have a whole bunch of other stuff
channels?
Here, too.
You are, but you're going to have
more. You're
going
to pay for it.
Yeah, you're going to pay for it, but you're probably going to have more of what you would want if you get something like this. But you're going to be able to pick what you want still, right? Like you're gonna be able to pick, hey, I might have to pay more, but I want ESPN. But I'm still going to pay less in the end because I don't want all the other stuff anyway.
But what happens if you have one show that you really like on CBS?
That's where I was going to go next.
Now next thing you know, you got to pay for that, and you pay for this, and it starts being higher than you
It will. And it might be higher. It might be the same as what you're paying for your original cable or whatever. It keeps going up and up, right?
Who knows your provider is. It's not just cable. Streaming services can go up and up.
Well, so what I really think is going to happen when things like this start happening... And I don't know if over-the-air can do this like a regular cable channel like ESPN can, but I would say all your NBC programming is going to be on Peacock. Mm-hmm. All your CBS programming is going to be on Paramount Plus. Mm-hmm. It's already going that way.
It
right?
is. Mm-hmm.
And all your and Fox will be on Hulu, or they'll find something.
Like I said, that was one thing here is like Fox, ESPN and Fox are major competitors.
Yeah.
Here. So where does Fox fall in this whole thing? Because we already know that Fox has the West Coast right now because of conference realignment. So what do you do as a sports fan? You're going to pay $20 to $35 a month for ESPN, and you're going to also pay for your Amazon membership, which I don't know how that's all going to work. You pay for all that. Well, then where are you going to get the FS1 and Fox football games? You're going to have to pay an additional fee for that somewhere else through another provider. So then all of a sudden you start sitting here and everybody talks about, well, I'm going to save a whole bunch of money by streaming, or as you just said, well, I'll be able to pick out what I want and think I'm going to save money. And I think what's going to happen is you won't. I think what's going to happen
either.
Is you're going to end up spending more. Because you're going to say, well, I really need that one thing on that streaming platform. So I'll go ahead and pay the $9.99 a month there. Then I want this for $12.99. And I want, I got to pay $79.99 for Amazon ESPN. Oh, but there's stuff I really still like on Paramount. So I'm going to get $29.99, whatever it is. Once you add it all up. I think you're going to find that you're actually going to find out you might spend more money.
Yeah.
It actually might not be as good as people think because things are going to be spread across the board. And now you're going to have to pay, right now you already have to do it. Max, Showtime, HBO, things like that. Now, if you can find bundles that combine a lot of stuff you like, but odds are there's always going to be something that's out there. You're going to have to decide, is it worth is it worth me paying $19.99 because there's one series I like to watch, you know? Is it, well, like right now, is it worth me paying to watch the Royals to pay $20 a month, you know, if I can't get them where I'm at? Is it worth it? Some people say no because they're horrible. Others just say, well, it is. Bobby Witt Jr. is amazing to watch. It's worth $20. Those are the decisions you have to make eventually as a consumer. And I will say this. Here's the big thing. Network television is dying. I mean, they came out with the newest ratings in regards to the numbers. It's the lowest it's been, I think, ever. Because people are split. They're fractured. They watch a series on Netflix. They watch a series on Amazon Prime. They watch a series on Hulu. They watch this on YouTube or whatever it might be. And then, nope, there might be something on CBS or ABC, but then I might watch it through the streaming platform. People aren't watching stuff on regular broadcast TV as much as they did before. And I've said this for a long time. People are like, oh my God, the NCAA tournament's on TNT and it's not on CBS. Remember, the national championship game's on TNT, not CBS. Well, there are people that don't get cable. There are people that don't get streaming. They just stuck with the three channels. So I'm like, well, if you're stuck with the three channels, you're way, way, way behind the times. Now, at the same time, you might not be able to afford anything more than back in the day when I was growing up, you had three or four channels. There wasn't a explosion of a whole bunch of cable channels. There were some. But we knew this was coming if you were paying attention. I mean, we see it coming. Super Bowl is now going to be on Nickelodeon with a whole different second broadcast to appease to younger people, getting them hooked on football and things like that. We are already seeing these things happen. The NCAA tournament on TNT, we see big time college football games that are, well, college football playoff, I think, has been before, or national championships game has been on ESPN and not ABC, I think, at least one of those years. Mm-hmm. So this is where we're kind of going, is the network companies are still going to survive, but they're going to transition and move their stuff, as you just said earlier, all over to those different platforms.
Yeah, they've already started.
Plus, Peacock, they already have.
It's like
redundant right now. And it's redundant because it's available on regular NBC and Peacock. It's regular CBS, but you can go back and watch it later on Paramount Plus. Yeah, it's already happening. Absolutely. And so they're pushing you, you can see the vision. And that is that everything is going to be all streaming. Everything's going to be streaming. Your network channels, you can get your local Wichita News, Topeka News on these streaming platforms. You can. It used to be, well, I'm going to lose all my local. No, you won't from that standpoint when it comes to TV. So it's a fascinating business and where it's going. And we predicted this for a while. We've talked about on the show where it's going. And I still think there's going to be something at some point that's going to be a major. I'm just waiting for Amazon, and maybe this is it. Amazon or Apple, or maybe there's another entity with a lot of financial capital that's just going to be all in. They're going to jump in, and they're going to buy the rights to one particular element, whether it's the college football playoff. There would be one, right? They want to change that. Maybe have to change it again after the Pac-12 basically disintegrating. The next TV deal for the SEC, you don't think the SEC is going to say, you know what? Everything's going streaming. Let's just go ahead and put all our stuff on Amazon or Apple or whatever might be. You got Apple TV right now.
That's why it's very beneficial for ESPN to hitch the wagon to one of these places. And Amazon's the hot one right now. Well, and I think that
Amazon's one of the biggest companies in the world.
Yeah, I would think that Amazon would be where I would want to start if I was ESPN.
I'd say them or Apple.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's more.
Amazon's more into the streaming part.
And I think there's a more ubiquitous Amazon presence in households right now than there is
because
Apple.
You got Amazon. You can get, you got,
I mean, I know
you,
people
you got
have
pharmacies.
Their phones.
Pharmacy stuff now is tied into Amazon. Amazon is absolutely more than just, you know, watching a show or buying something.
Yeah, like I can't get on Apple's website and order a pair of shoes. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not
Amazon. You can go and do a search.
Right now, you can do whatever you want on Amazon. I mean, you can find almost anything you would want.
Almost.
But it's like, you know, people are going to make their decisions whether that's the way they do that, do their shopping and stuff like that, whatever. But I'm telling you, man, it is ubiquitous. I don't know anybody that's not talking about Amazon in my life, to be completely honest.
Oh, I agree
with
you.
Like, even my mom, right? Yeah. When she's trying to find something that she can't find in town.
That's the key. So, but, you know, we have a lot of advertisers, local businesses, and we're talking about Amazon, and we're not promoting them from the standpoint you should do Amazon or whatever else. But that's the thing. Like you said, the key with your mom is if she can't find something, she figures she can find it on Amazon. But the thing is, there are some people that don't even take the time to give the local business business a chance. And so they just go to Amazon directly, have it shipped to their house. And so that happens with a lot of people. And so then that hurts your small town business.
Absolutely does.
Instead of going in, if you have a local shoe store and you know that they might carry what you want, instead of, you know, driving to that store, going inside that store and trying on the shoes that you might like, you just say, well, I'll just order them off Amazon. And if they're not the right size, I'll ship them back.
For free.
Yeah, for free. Right. And so that's obviously the Walmarts of the world obviously hurt grocery stores across the country in small towns. And I don't think there's any doubt that Amazon hurts retail businesses across the country.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So we... Amazon's here to stay. Yeah. Amazon, now we're talking about how big it is and what all it does. We haven't touched the tip of the iceberg of what all they have. But now we're talking about, you knew it was coming when they got the deal with the NFL for Thursday night football games on Amazon Prime Video.
Yeah.
And now you got them talking with ESPN about a partnership. And this, nobody should be surprised by this. If you're surprised by this, you've lived under a rock for a very long time.
Wait, listen, and I know local companies that have been ahead of the curve on
this,
right? And knowing that we need to do what we can because streaming is where it's going, right?
Yeah.
And so we need to have internet. Mm-hmm. Internet is what you need.
Yes.
And if you don't have it, then and that's going to be probably in some of the small town rural areas that aren't as lucky as we are here that are going to have issues with it.
Yes, it will.
And people already had issues last year,
with Thursday night Prime Video football games.
Yeah.
Had some issues with it. That's why the state of Kansas, and we're talking about a big broadband initiative across the state, $451 million proposal, I think I saw the other day, or on our website. Your states, your leaders, or I like to say not leaders, but elected officials across the board, those elected officials are going to have to be proactive. I know I say that word all the time. If you're reactive and not proactive, your people in your state are going to suffer, no matter what it is. But in particular with this, okay, so streaming goes so quickly, and all the stuff goes to a streaming platform, and all these things you want to watch. But if the technology can't keep up in certain areas of the country, those people are left out.
Yeah.
You know, they absolutely are left out. It's no different than we got 5G across the country, and there's places in the country that are still on 3G. Oh, wait a minute. They pulled the 3G. Well, what the heck am I supposed to do? I don't have connectivity here. Well, that's because we need to upgrade from 3G to 4G or 4G to 5G. And you're like, wait a minute. We're the last ones to get this. This doesn't work so well. But then I go to this place, and it works great. And then sometimes you yell at the provider. It's like, no, sometimes it's your plan because you don't want to spend the money to actually have the quicker bandwidth or better bandwidth or bigger bandwidth. With the quicker processing speeds and download and upload speeds. And so a lot of people that are still confused as to, you know, who to blame when it doesn't work. And sometimes it's you because you don't step up to the plate and get a bigger, a better package because you have options. Sometimes it is the provider. Sometimes it's not any of that. Sometimes it's your elected officials that keep dragging their feet because we don't have the technology. We don't have it put in yet to keep up, because sometimes technology advances quicker than we can keep up with. And that's what drives the older generations insane. And trust me, I know all about that. And I will be one of those people that'll fall in that category if I live long enough as well.
Oh, yeah. We'll all get there at some point.
Yes, we will.
We just want to stop, right?
Something to look forward to, right? Absolutely. So anyway, that is big news. We'll see if it comes to fruition, but it's something that's been talked about for a while, and if you weren't aware of it, we've made you aware of it here on the show. All right, Dusty, football jamborees. We've got volleyball. We're going to talk a couple of volleyball head coaches here in a moment, too.
Yeah, football jamborees tonight. You're going to want to check and make sure all these times are accurate, because I don't know if I've been told all the updates yet. But as of what I have, Bullitt at Sabetha with Marysville at 6 o'clock tonight. They're in Sabetha. Osborne's at home with Victorian Hoxie. That's been moved to 7 o'clock. St. John's Tipton at Maxville. Pratt Skyland and South Barbara are there at 7. Rock Hills at Clifton. Clyde with Lynn and Hanover at 7 o'clock. And Sylvan Lucas has Pike Valley. Maybe another team, too, at 7 o'clock here tonight. And Lincoln's at Mound Ridge with Oxford, originally scheduled for 6 o'clock. So, again, I guess if it's 6 o'clock, you'll be there an hour early to stay in your air conditioning and wait until 7 if the other two that I don't have that are still 6 o'clock that have been moved back or anything like that. But I know they're pushing things back because of the heat, just like they moved some stuff from Thursday to tomorrow because of the heat. Again, Osborne girls tennis team will open their season out tomorrow. They're at the Trigo Round Robin in Waukenies. So that's where we're at right there with football and tennis. Also, as Wade mentioned, we do have volleyball opening today for a couple of our area teams, including St. John's Tipton, Osborne, and Lincoln. They'll all be competing over in Osborne at the Northern Plains League Triangular there. And then Thunder Ridge will open their season at Natoma, along with Stockton, who will be playing their first volleyball match as a member of the NPL tonight. So, again, those are the things that are going on here today. And then the Bullitt Lady Trojans will open their season out tomorrow at the Hayes Maroon and Gold Tournament. You can find schedules for all of these teams at nckssports.com. And again, the Hayes would be the pool play matches. They're posted on their team schedule there at NCKSSports.com. And then all of the Northern Plains League matches already posted as well. So we're looking again tonight. And we're going to hear from both the head coaches of St. John's Tipton and Beloit. St. John's Tipton coming off of a 33-10 finish, fourth place last year at 1A Division II state tournament. Did lose four seniors, including Ella Wiles, who led their team in kills, blocks, aces, and digs. But they do return four key players, including Carly Brummer, Aubrey Gingler, Jenny Gingler, and Linnell Gingler. As St. John's Tipton gets their season started today, and then the Beloit Lady Trojans, again, coming off of a state tournament appearance last year. A great season for them. They went 35-7 with kind of a younger group last year, and most of those players are back. They had just one senior, and we'll talk with Coach Brandy Paul about that. But they're looking pretty good. Everything that they've done over the summer, and they'll continue to roll on. Obviously, the key names that you'll hear for Beloit are Miley Brown and Addison Budke, and we'll keep track of all of that. Kaylin and Jaden Follis are back this year as well, and they'll get Sophia Thompson here in a couple weeks as well after transferring in last year. So this team has got a lot of high expectations, as they always do, coming into the season. So Beloit, again, will start at Hayes tomorrow. St. John's Tipton starting today at Osborne. And again, had a chance to talk with both of the head coaches of the Lady J, Stacy Perez, and Lady Trojans, Brandy Paul. We're joined by Stacy Perez, the head coach of the St. John's Tipton Lady Blue Jay volleyball team here on the Sports Ticket. Coach, thanks for taking some time to join us here, getting set for another season as you'll open at the Osborne Triangular with Osborne and Lincoln. Kind of looking at your squad, you did finish fourth place last year at the state tournament in 1A Division II out there at Emporia, but you did lose four seniors off of that group, and Ella Wiles, Katie Brummer, as well as Emma Jones and Lauren Ellens. So you're going to have to replace some of those that you lost from last year. You do have a group back that has some experience. When you look at this group so far and your expectations and your returners that you have, what does everything look like for St. John's Tipton Lady Blue Jay volleyball here this year?
Well, they're looking pretty strong, and we have Carly Brummer coming back. She was second to Ella last year. She is a very strong hitter. She's a go-getter, just all over the court doing everything for us. Aubrey Gingler is our setter. She set very well for us last year. It was her first time setting all the way around. And her twin sister they're becoming really good leaders for us. Jen is a good outside hitter. She is ready to step up and take more of a lead on that this year. And Linnell Gingler was our other starter. She had 97 kills as a freshman, stepped in for us and did a really good job. And she had 44 blocks. So we're expecting big things from her this year.
How important is it, like you talk about, just for the prognosis of this team and how you feel that they can do against some of the other league teams, to have like a setter and a good hitter returning and be able to kind of build from there?
Yeah, it's really important. We have a little bit of experience that we haven't always had. We've had maybe one or two good players, but with four of them coming back with lots of experience, we think that'll be great for our program, and we're looking forward to it.
What have practices looked like for you here so far this year? I know you guys are inside, but it's probably still warm. What's practice been like, and how do the girls look here coming out of the gate?
Well, we have only 11 players this year, so we have to be a little creative on practice. But this group has been coming to practice. They're ready to work each day. They're up for any challenge that we put at them. We did go up to Tipton because they have a little bit of air conditioning this week just to give them a little break, but they're working hard. They're working harder on blocks and coverage this year. We do have good hitters, like I said, but they're trying to improve in all those areas.
I know that, the first time out, every time you go out, you want to pick up wins. But when you go out here and take on Lincoln and Osborne here today, what are the things that you'll look at and things that you focus on for the group the first time out?
We're just looking to see how our team performs. Like I said, we have a couple of spots that will have some really young girls in them. We hope to get those nerves out right away. Our girls have been really good at building them up and trying to teach them everything on where they need to go and the attitudes they need to have. And so we're just really looking forward to getting out there and getting some nerves out early and be ready to go.
Stacy Perez, the head coach of the St. John's Tipton Lady Blue Jay volleyball team. Thanks for the time, Coach, and best of luck as you open out the season and throughout this year.
Thank you.
And we're now joined by Brady Paul, the head coach of the Boyd Letty Trojan volleyball team. Coach, obviously it's always an exciting time to get the season started, and you built a program there that's had a lot of success. You're coming off of a year last year where you did make it to the state tournament. You went 35-7 and had just one senior on that group. So a lot of experience. You know, the bigger names that you're going to hear early on from, you know, the media outlets would be Miley Brown and Addison Budke, but you later on in this season will get Sophia Thompson. She'll be eligible for you as well, and obviously you have a very good group, as you only lost one senior. As you look at how things are going in practices, getting ready for this season, what's it look like for Letty Trojan volleyball?
It's going very well. These girls played a lot of volleyball this summer and had a terrific summer season, and you know, the girls you mentioned, and then you add the Fallis twins, which, you know, and Peyton Remus on the back row, which are our foundation of our team. Mm-hmm. Our passing has come so far. And, you know, you add that passing, that defensive end to it, and then you have them offensive players. They're really fun to watch, this group.
When you kind of look and assess this team, and what did you see maybe over the summer? Because you were still a relatively young team last year and still made it to the state tournament and had a lot of success.
Yeah, I just saw a lot of confidence, believing in themselves more, and just controlling the ball and just, the confidence we gained, you know, from going to the state tournament and getting that experience, and then having all these girls back that have played together for the, you know, going on the second season and longer than that, because, you know, they all played together in winter volleyball and in junior high. So these girls have played with each other a long time and they feel comfortable. It just comes easy to them. It's fun to watch. The quality of volleyball they're playing is pretty spectacular. So, they're just a fun group to watch. You know, I just get to sit down and watch sometimes, and that's not typical with me. I'm a little superstitious, so I stay standing a lot. But this summer, I just sat back and watched them, and, you know, the confidence, and they're just running things, and, you know, they're leading the team. It's their team, and they're doing a great job at being positive, and they're all working together, and it's just been really fun.
Kind of taking it inside of what you do in a practice. I'm sure with the veteran group, like you just talked about, that can lead the team, you can get to a lot more things during a practice, right?
Oh, yeah. They know the routine, and we roll through practice, and they work hard, and they know that we're pushing hard in practice, and we make our practices, we try to make them harder than, you know, the game-like situations. So when the game comes, it's easy and it flows. So just the energy we've had in the gym and the positive attitudes, and they're just having a lot of fun. And just a great group. They have a vision, you know, they know what they want to accomplish, and they know we need to take, you know, one week at a time, and the rest will come to us. So it's going to be an exciting season with this group of girls.
You open with the Hayes tournament coming up on Saturday. This is always a tournament that features bigger teams. Solana South will be there. You'll take on Colby and Olathe West as part of your pool play. And then obviously on the other side, Hayes, Mays South, Scott City, and TMP. It's a very good tournament, and you're going to see a lot of good competition right off the bat. How do you feel your team kind of stacks up with that group as far as you know about these teams right now?
This is going to be one of the toughest teams. They'll have two of the best teams out there that we could possibly see all season, including that state. You know, our pool has Olathe. We're going to play Olathe in it, and they're 6A, and they made it to state and didn't lose much. So they're a state contender this year to be in the top four at 6A. And so that'll be fun to go against them and see where we're at. And on the other side, Mays South is there, and they made it to 5A state and are a top contender and top four for 5A this year. You know, they have three D1 players that have already signed, and we played them last year and took them to three sets, so that was fun. And, you know, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go out there. We'll see Salina South in our pool, which is 5A, and they're always competitive. And then we will play Colby. And I don't know much about Colby, just from what I saw last year, and it looked like they were a young team last year. So, you know, they're going to return some experience, too, so we got to be ready for that, not overlook them. But this tournament's just fun to go out and see where we're at and see what we need to work on. And, you know, we're going to go try our best and see what we need to improve on. And, you know, we're not looking at the win-loss at this tournament. We're looking at the growth and see what we need to do to be prepared, you know, because, like I said, this is like state and better than state. So we're going to see where we need to go from here. And I just want them to go out and play their best and see how it goes.
Brandy Paul, the head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans here on Katy Country 94. Coach, we're looking forward to seeing how the season goes for you. Best of luck as you open out on Saturday.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, so this should be a very exciting volleyball season for a lot of teams here in North Central Kansas, and it gets going here today and this weekend, and then, of course, next week we got football, and we got cross country and tennis and all kinds of stuff that's taking place here as we get into the fall sports season. Latest sports information, visit nckisports.com. Anything else you want to add?
Rankings are supposed to come out hopefully today for volleyball, so we'll get a kind of an idea on where everybody's at to start the season. They don't mean anything right now, obviously, but talking with Brandy yesterday off the air, she's like, yeah, I don't care about the rankings right now, but I think they're supposed to come out tomorrow.
I mean,
which would be today.
For me, if I was ranking the teams in 3A volleyball, because I saw all eight, the same eight last year, made it the year before. Mm-hmm. And Olathe Heritage Christian, of course, didn't lose a set last year, and their losses were to like Lawrence Free State and bigger schools, and they're a private school, and don't get me started on all that. Did anybody notice that Wichita Collegiate needed a quarterback and somehow found one?
That's right,
amazing.
Down the road.
Right down the road. Yeah. How does that happen? Does that just
on a
just
team that probably would have been pretty good if their quarterback wouldn't have left?
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's amazing. But remember, the school didn't do that.
Not at all.
Not well. Actually, the coaches didn't do that. It's and you know what? I've talked about this before. You know, technically, the coaches might not have. But they happen to talk to a donor or a booster or an alum saying, yeah, we really need a quarterback. And like, hey, I think I can convince this kid from Heston to come over.
Here, he might be able to come over and play for you.
Right, right. So anyway, Olathe Heritage Christian is a private school. And, of course, Smith Center was excited when they moved up to 3A because they lost in the finals in state Smith Center. The next year they won it, but Heritage Christian went to 3A. Then they won it. Then they won it again last year. And they've got two girls back that I believe are D1. One's going to Iowa State.
Yeah, Van Gorp, I think, is going to Iowa State.
Yeah, and they're two D1 girls that are going to be back. And so they're still going to be loaded and really, really good. So they got to be the number one team in the preseason rankings.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is a no doubter. But then you look at everybody else from the teams that made it to state a year ago. Nemaw Central only lost one match all year until the championship. They lost a lot of seniors and talent, and others did as well. Smoky Valley's got some good talent coming back. Riverton lost a ton of talent for seniors. What I'm trying to get to is Beloit should be ranked number two. If anybody that's following 3A volleyball and actually understands what's going on and what people lost and who they lost and what's coming back, Beloit should be, I would imagine, no worse than three, but probably should be number two. I think they are perhaps the biggest threat to Olathe Heritage Christian. The thing is, nobody took a set off of them last year, and they were really, really good teams last year that played Heritage Christian. So that's the thing that is a bummer, and we talk about this all the time in high school sports. You can have this amazing team, and you can be a public school, and then you run into a private school that, you know, has some kids from different places. They're like, oh, that's weird. They just filled in that hole that they lost due to graduation amazingly. And then don't even get me started on, you know, Bishop Miege have 125 football players out and playing 4A. But in Keisha, I don't think is that I was asked this the other day. Somebody told me the other day, like, well, aren't there already multipliers that's going to be taken care of? And I said, no, they've talked about it. They've talked about it a lot, but all they do is talk. Nothing gets done. And I don't think Keisha will do anything about it.
Down the road.
Yeah. I think they'll kick the can down the road for years. I don't think in my lifetime, maybe that's too strong, but I don't think I'm going to see within the next 10 years, I don't think you're going to see any kind of changes in regards to public versus private schools in the state of Kansas in regards to we bump up this school because they've won so many championships one class, or we're going to have a private sector and then we're going to have the public sector of schools and different divisions. I don't think it's happening. I don't think Keisha has the guts to do it. I don't think, I think, I shouldn't say that. Keisha will have too much pressure not to do it. That's my point, which I guess you could say guts, but they're supposed to honor what the member schools want. So if the member schools, okay, make it to where, you know, they can't get this passed based on how many votes they need to make it work, you know, it's not going to happen no matter if Keisha kind of wants it to happen. But I don't think Keisha is going to just have the guts to say this has to be done.
No, well, that's the thing, too, about a lot of the Keisha stuff is, like, yes, the schools can present things and decide on it. And once you get to that point,
but you gotta get
the schools literally decide on it, right?
But
you also got to have
Keisha's got to help get you that
executive
point.
Board,
right.
Get board of point. Directors. It's got to pass through two places before the schools get the chance to vote
on it.
That's
right.
And so we can present this all we want. We can come up with the findings all we want. But still, in
Keisha's
got
to have the guts
Keisha
to get it to that
to
point.
Get it started, right? Mm-hmm. They've got to get all these things that are presented at every board meeting that Keisha has, mm-hmm. somebody's got to present it, whether it's a league, whether it's a school, whether there's like five mm-hmm. schools to get together and do it and get it presented. It's just like, you know, a lot of what we're talking about with the, you know, getting 3A playoffs like 4A playoffs, yep. you know, and things like that. And being able to do the same things that you're doing in the upper classes with the smaller classes. You got to have somebody present all that to Keisha. Mm-hmm. And then it's got to go through the executive board and board of directors. Two different entities have to approve this before you can vote on it. And it's like there have been so many things that have gone through to that point that just don't go through for the schools to vote on.
Exactly. And I don't think this will.
Yeah. But then there's other things that go through. Like you put together an entire plan for 6A through 1A, bring 1A back together, and then that all goes through without 1A really having a decision to go from a split to going back together because the entire state votes on that.
Right.
The entire state votes on it. 2 years later, 1A presents a proposal, let's split it back up. And then that goes through, and then 1A split back up. And it's like there's so many things that they've voted on in the past that have – yeah, it's about the schools voting on it, but it's not like what all the schools want. But because you did an entire state vote the one time, 1A went back together. Listen, and it's like there's so many things, though, that go into that that I don't think people realize. And you know, we need, there's things we need to talk about as media of things that are happening. And that multiplier thing is definitely one of the hot topics when it was going on and when mm-hmm. they presented all their findings and this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, but because there was so much talk about it, because you're not the only one. I've had many people talk to me about, isn't there a multiplier now? No, there's not. They were talking about it. And they presented their findings of what that means and what it would do for Kansas sports. But there's never been a vote by the schools or it's, I don't even know if it's gone to the first entity yet, to the executive board. So I don't even know where that's at, to be completely honest right now, because there's so much that goes on that you talk about and you try to follow, but it gets to the point where it's like, why am I following this anymore if nothing's happening with
it? Well, the other thing, the other part of the problem, too, is now you got to get your state elected officials involved with the modifier and everything else. And so I got this sent to me, a story back in March. And like I said, I don't think you're going to see it, period. I don't think you're going to see it for a very long time if it ever happens. But the plan in HB 2003 stuck in the House Education Committee, the chair isn't planning on his committee to take any action this year. I don't believe the session is going to even come up. That was back in March. He said next year could be possible. The votes aren't there to pass it. There's a lot of questions that folks still have, a lot of potential amending language, so forth and so on. The Keisha Executive Board and Board of Directors already approved the plan, as have a majority of member schools, a majority of classification. Keisha State Board of Education added its approval last summer, but before the plan could be enacted, Keisha needs the approval of the legislature and the governor. They started the process in January with a hearing before the House Education Committee. Since then, the committee hasn't taken any actions. Bill Faflick said, we'll try to learn from the chairman what were those reasons that didn't get worked, and it may be that he didn't feel like there was enough support for it on a committee. I'm not sure. And we'll have a conversation, so forth and so on. So, you know, in fairness to Keisha, they pushed it all the way up to that point on the modifier, okay, on the modifier. So we're not talking about having private kept two different divisions. We're talking about a modifier. And basically you would move a school up that had won so many championships in a certain period of time, moves up one classification. And so anyway, when you get politicians involved, go ahead and take a clear glass of water and pour a whole bunch of sand, dirt, and mud into it, and that's what it looks like. I mean, so, and listen, you don't think money, lobbying, and power happens even with this? It does. I'm going to tell you right now, do you think Bishop Miege is all for this? Do you think Olathe Heritage Christian is for this? Do you think Wichita Collegiate's for this? Do you think Pittsburgh Colgan is for this? All the private schools, which a lot of private schools, not every private school, there are, you know, obviously we have smaller private schools in our area, but there are many very prominent private schools that have a lot of support, a lot of money, and they've got a lot of influence. And you don't think they're helping keep this from going any further? If you think there is nothing involved whatsoever, then I'm sorry, man. You don't know how politics work anymore. I've talked to somebody that's been on various, dealt with various things. I know just from the whole streaming thing, trying to deal with Keisha with the NFHS thing. We got politicians involved in that, shoving it inside a bill that has something to do with homosexuality, for crying out loud. And it's like, that shouldn't even be in the same bill. I mean, yeah. It shouldn't. It's ridiculous, you know, or transgender stuff. And this is how we do politics, and it doesn't make any sense. And so here's another one of those that, you know, people that follow this on a regular basis know it's a problem. You know, it is a problem, but nothing's going to happen. And you know why it's not going to happen? My apologies, Acacia, for not knowing that they had pushed it that far. I should have known that. My bad. I'm just kind of winging it here because I wasn't planning on talking about this today.
Yeah, exactly.
It just kind of came up. But at the same time, whether it's, you know, Acacia or they get it far enough down, put the ball down and inside the 5-yard line, you've got to have other people to get this through. And I just don't see it happening, period.
Well, and there's so many of these that you don't have to involve the government, right?
Right.
Like a lot of this stuff is... Keisha just takes care of it on their own. But if you do run into problems where, you know,
apparently
Keisha
can't take care of this on their own.
Apparently somebody, either they can't take care of it on their own or there's something in there where, you know, obviously maybe somebody from the private schools, you know, got involved and said, hey, this is a state issue. This is not just a state association issue or a school association issue. Then somehow, you know, I don't know how it all works and some of that stuff, but obviously this is something that has gotten politicians involved in it and the government, and it's probably not going to go anywhere for a long, long time.
And by the way, I'll clear something up in regards to when I say private division versus public division. I'm not saying that's what should happen because we don't have enough private schools anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's something that people have thrown out there. That's why I mentioned it. Like, well, we'll just have all the private schools be in their own class and then have all the public schools and then divvy them up by class. There's not enough private schools to do that. And then secondly, what do you do with the small little private
school?
How are they going to come? I mean, we're already talking about all these schools can't compete against Miege and all these others. How in the world is it going to work for a 1A little school private school if they're lumped in with all the private schools that are, you know, with Collegiate and Colgan and Miege and well, St. James and bigger schools that I haven't even mentioned yet, you know?
When I've talked about this, and people have talked about that part of it, right? And when you actually think about it, like you said, there's not enough private schools in this state. So if you did that, every single private school would only be in one division.
Like, right,
there's,
exactly.
There's only
That's
one class.
Right.
So it'd be like, you know, 6A, whatever class you're in. There wouldn't even be enough for one class. No. But they would have put them all in one class because there's just not enough of them.
Yeah.
So what that means...
Good luck Colgan against Miege.
Well, what that means is Tipton's playing St. Thomas Aquinas.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's what that means. Mm-hmm. And that's why that will never work in Kansas.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, we're not dealing in our area... St. John's and Tipton are schools that have been here for forever. They got a lot of legacy that go to those schools that move back to town, and they just have private schools, right?
Right.
They have private Catholic schools.
Sure.
They're not going out and doing the things that Bishop Miege, St. Thomas Aquinas, Bishop Carroll, Wichita Capen, whatever they're doing and getting guys. Collegiate, obviously, is a smaller level school in Wichita, but could be bigger if they would, you know, not cap their enrollment and other things that we talk about that we haven't talked about yet, how you can keep your school in
check.
How
you can manipulate things, yes.
I can't cap my enrollment at a public school.
No. Nope.
So it's just like all that stuff that goes on, but in the end, it would. You would have Tipton being in the same class as St. Thomas Aquinas,
right.
And it's just not...
That ain't going to work.
Not going to work, not going to happen.
Yeah. So, and listen, so anyway, getting back to the volleyball thing where I got off base a little bit there, but it is an interesting conversation, is, I don't know. I'm not that optimistic at all. I got somebody saying, I think there's more of an opportunity to get this thing done than you guys think. You just have to have the right legislator behind it. I don't know.
You have to have a...
You're going
to
need more than
just one. Yeah.
One person ain't going to be able to do it. You're going to have enough people. One, first of all, if you can't even get it, you got to get it out of committee. But you got to have the votes to... I would agree there might be you got to get the right legislator to get it through committee that you don't have now. But it's still got to pass. You still got the votes to pass it. And I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think you're going to have enough people. I think you're going to have too many people from those bigger city areas tied or connections with private schools that are not going to vote for it. I don't think you're going to get enough votes I just don't. Yeah, if it was left up to a vote of all the member schools, we know how this would go. It would be overwhelmingly, yes, modifier. Yeah. We know that because the private schools are outnumbered. We established that. But like I've talked about before, it's kind of like in real world society. We got a group of people that are really good influencing people that don't represent all of society. And they represent what? Maybe 1% of the country? All these lobbyists, former politicians, even current politicians, or rich people. People talk about Bill Gates and other people with the influence they have, or Warren Buffett, whoever. There's a small amount of people that have that dramatic whole bunch of influence, right? So even though if the country voted, and we didn't even do this electoral college crap, and we actually just went vote by vote, and said, okay, let's go ahead and put it all in one, and you vote for the candidate, and it's just straight up, whoever gets the most votes wins, or whatever else, then you would at least have a... I don't want to get into the politics of it too much, yeah. But the point being is that you would hear from everybody, you know what I'm saying? Whereas when you have people that have power, when you have people that have money, they have more influence than people that don't. It's as simple as that. It don't sound good. You hate to say it out loud, but it's true. And this is no different, in my opinion. You can't tell me that if there's a chance that this thing, that it's going to get through committee, and then there's a chance, and the rumor is that it's going to have enough votes to get through. You don't think there's going to be some doctor from Wichita Collegiate that's a big sports fan, or some lawyer from Bishop Miege, or wherever else private school you want to pick. You don't think that they have connections and influence and power. You don't think they're going to try to somehow get it to where, you know what, it's really close. Oh, well, there's a couple people we can sway. This is what happens all the time when you try to pass bills in any form of government. You've got to sway somebody or what? Sell your soul to the devil and promise them something in order to get their vote. You know what? I'm going to get you that contract for the state of Iowa, Mr. Such and Such Senator from Iowa, as long as you vote for this. Well, I don't think it's the right plan, but hey, I'm going to get some kind of kickback out of this. Okay, you got my vote. If you don't think that happens with this stuff too, man, you really just go ahead and live where you do, because I'm glad you do, because you don't have to worry about this stuff anymore, but this stuff happens. I've heard it firsthand from people. I've read about it. I know people that actually have been to Washington, D.C. These things happen, okay? And if you think it doesn't happen at the state level in the state of Kansas, then naive is the word of the day for me.
Yeah.
If it is close... You think the little guy is going to have enough influence to push to keep this person's vote?
Even the little guy in town that's just as big as far as enrollment and as far as the population base and as far as everything else. Like, are you is there somebody going to be lobbying for Kansas City, Washington? Is there somebody going to be lobbying for Olathe Northwest? I don't know. I don't know what kind of money is running around Olathe. I don't know what kind of, you know, some places Blue Valley probably has money, right? Like, but are they going to have the push and influence that a private school can have? In Overland Park in Roland Park.
Well, let's go back to this. Oh, yeah. Olathe Heritage Christian and Beloit. I was talking about volleyball. Yeah. I think they're probably the two best teams if you rank them right now. One's private, one's public. Do you think Beloit has as much political pull as Olathe Heritage Christian?
Doubtful.
I would say probably not. So anyway, those are the rankings of volleyball. Maybe. We don't know yet. They're going to come out.
Heritage Christian will be number one.
If they're not, there should be an investigation. And they should be based on what they have
absolutely.
On the floor.
Listen.
Two-time champ. Lots of time.
You know, and Heritage Christian is kind of...
And by the way, the private schools are playing by the rules that are there. Yeah, I'm not... You know, I got people yelling at private schools and why they do this. Like, if they're allowed to do it and they're playing by the rules, then, I mean, why do you hate people that...
Yeah.
It is what it is. Yeah, it's not something that they're doing criminal activity here.
No, and we've discussed this, I think, before, too. Like, Heritage Christian's a little bit of an outlier because they're only doing it in one sport, right?
Like this, and they haven't been around for a long time.
They have a lockdown on volleyball now. Right. But you look at... So the two that we would talk about in Kansas City are Miege and Aquinas. Now, St. James in volleyball, and they're starting to get... They won a state football championship two years ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, St. James is obviously inching their way into this discussion of being a not just a one sport thing.
Like, yes.
And so, you know, I think a lot of people just, when it was collegiate, when you were in school and when I was in school and when everybody was in school, like winning tennis titles and stuff like that, the country club sports is what they call them, right? So tennis and golf and things like that. When they were just winning those, I think people were just willing to let it go, right? Like, well, they can have private instructors just like anybody. You could go to Wichita and have a private instructor teach you tennis your whole life too, right? Like, I think that's what kind of the mindset of it was, right? And it's like, well, yeah, I get it, but it's kind of an unfair advantage when we just don't have those resources. Texas, right? And that's what, when I was in high school, that's what it was. And I'm pretty sure that's probably what it was when you were in high school, too. And it's like, I think we kind of just forgot about it, didn't care about it when it was just the individual stuff like mm-hmm. that. But if it's become, obviously, late 80s. I've done the research on a lot of this stuff, by the way. Late 80s is when I think it started with Aquinas, I believe. But either way, like, that's kind of in the end of the 90s, you started seeing more of these. And then early 2000s, it started getting to be, I think, a problem. By the 2010s, it was out of control. Like, the amount of state championships. I did the research one year. I think it was like private schools represent like 7% of the schools at that time in Kansas, and they had won like 26% of the state championships that are available. And it's like, now a lot of those were in 5A, 4A, whatever. But then you're adding to the fact the schools that should probably be 5A that are playing 4A and all that stuff that adds into it. So you get into a situation where it's just, it gets to be crazy with schools that are doing it in every sport. So
right.
I do, Heritage Christian catches a lot of the backlash of that, I think. But they, obviously put in the work to build a good program there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to discredit that.
Right.
Because they're not doing it everywhere.
And right.
Way volleyball is right now, there's a lot of schools that, even public schools, that are taking advantage of these resources to build their programs in the off season. So Heritage Christian is not the only one that's doing that.
No. And we could go talk a long time about all this stuff. I just, for me, right off the top of my head, and I don't know every single private school off the top of my head right now in regards to the big ones other than the ones that stand out to me. And, for me, it's...
Well, and Colgan was a huge one back in the day. They don't win as much as they used to. So
right,
I guess
they don't.
We're doing
they don't.
Better
but,
there.
But, it's not, you can't tell me Colgan 1A can't compete at 2A. They can.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me that collegiate at their 3A can't compete at 4A. And you can't tell me at my age can't compete at 5A or even 6A.
They're doing it 4A. 6A schools.
And I know Andale is not a private school, but Andale, you can't tell me they can't compete at 4A because I've seen them compete at 4A, and now they dominate 3A, and they have 80 to 100 kids out for football. And all of these that I'm talking about should be up a classification. McPherson as well. McPherson, to me, can battle anybody in 5A, even private schools, and do pretty well in various sports, in particular basketball. And so to me, yes, I might be old fuddy-duddy, but I remember where Miege was obviously 5A, McPherson is 5A, and they would meet up in various situations. And then 4A, you got Hayden was 4A, and then Andale would face Andale would be in 4A, and then of course once Andale went to 3A, now they have like a 50 game winning streak, and they're not even, nobody's coming close to touching them except Southeast, I guess, for a half a couple years ago. And it is an impressive winning streak, but at the same time, it's like, dude, you got how many more players than most people in 3A, the facilities that you have compared to everybody else in this classification. Once again, I'm not blaming Andale. They're not doing anything illegal or wrong that I'm aware of. And they've benefited by dropping from 4A to 3A. And so if some schools from 5A to 4A, some from 3 to 2, some 2 to 1, yeah, there's no doubt. Obviously, football's benefited. They're not private. They've benefited from going from 3 to 2A.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. Football-wise, they made a couple deep runs in the playoffs this year that they might not have done had they been 3A. So, you benefit by going down a classification, no question. But for some people, I think for some of these private schools that go down a classification, it's like, dear God, you already can win at the level you're at. Now you're going to go down a level in a class? Well, dear, that don't seem right. And there's where the modifier idea comes in. Like, well, you guys have already proven you can play at this level. Why don't you, come up with these amount of championships, whatever the period is. And, Miege is back at 5A. such and such is back to 4A and so forth and so on.
Yeah,
you
can go a lot of different directions
and
all that. Like, I could be Bishop Miege and say, well, why doesn't Andale have to move up with a modifier? Because they win every championship and they've won 51 games in a row just because they're a public school. Why do they not have to move up?
Exactly.
They've been dominating just like we have.
It just goes to show that you don't have to be a private school
to dominate. That's going to be an argument against the multiplier, right?
Yeah,
it's like, okay, well, private schools aren't the only ones with long winning streaks. Smith Center won almost 80 games in a row. They're not a public school. They're not a private school.
That would be the argument.
You could easily, in Centralia volleyball back in the day, right? Like, in Nemaha Central when Tennels were there, right? Like, you could go all the way back and be like, okay, well, these aren't private schools, and they're dominating, winning. Longest winning streaks in this state are not private schools. That's what you could say.
Yeah, you could. Of course, that's
the
years
public
ago.
School can also say, well, we don't play 4A, 6A schools in our league all the time. So when you go down a level and you're playing 5A, 6A, you're going to beat all the four.
You got a better chance.
It's like you get a better chance. So. Yeah. But it's all kinds of things that are involved in that. But it's hard for me to like completely pay attention to that and keep up with it because I'm on your side. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I don't either.
Anytime soon.
No, I don't either. I'm not hopeful. Call me pessimistic from that standpoint, but And I hope John is right, and that there's more momentum there eventually here in the next few years where something like that could happen, because I'm for it. I'm for the modifier. Obviously, you can tell Dusty and I both are, because we know these teams can compete at the next level and still win championships. So, yeah, discuss amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
Go from there. And once again, that's one thing about the modifier, too, is based on, and I don't know exactly the details in front of me, but if I remember correctly, it's like so many championships and so many sports over this last, what, 5 years or 3 years, whatever it was.
There's a period that would, you know, even if they do it, it wouldn't take effect for, I think, three
right.
or 4 years.
Right.
But so, and I don't have all that right in front
right.
of me, so don't quote any of this, but there is the multiplier does, and it's in your specific sport. So,
okay.
like, Aquinas could win all these football, or Miege, good example, has won all these 4A football titles, right? So they move up in football, but if
not
they're not
the
winning in basketball and tennis or whatever other sport, right?
They would stay where they are.
Stay where they're at.
Yeah.
It's a sport specific, from my understanding,
yeah.
it's sport specific with your success. It's not, and that's how every sport
and
is.
The reason
right? Boyd plays 2A football, but they're 3A and
right.
everything else, right?
right.
So it yeah. just kind of depends on what the sport is, and then
right.
then you get placed, and
yeah.
then they'll figure it out.
And the reason I bring this up is people, if they're listening to St. John's Tipton, and going, oh my God, we'd have to go up a classification. No, that's not the modifier.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And
now, if you want a whole bunch of titles, you would.
Yeah.
But.
It's a deep thing. Like, even when St. John's Tipton boys basketball was really good and probably had a chance to win like three state titles in a row, maybe,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't have been enough
mm-hmm.
over the right period of time for them to even have to move.
Right.
So this is for the ones that are winning
yes.
all the time in every sport, basically.
Yeah.
But. You know, you can separate it in different sports.
Because it would not be fair at all to move all the private schools
no.
up a class, no matter how
well,
good
that
or bad
was
they
good.
Are.
That was a plan that was out
that
there,
was,
right?
It was.
Like, just
that'd be the cleanest,
move the private
way,
schools up a class. And it's like, okay, well, you're moving a 14 school, or sometimes, you know, like 29 kids in the
yeah.
entire school, I think, one year at Tipton.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to move them up to 2A?
Yeah.
Okay, good luck.
Yeah, that's not good. No, not at all. So I wanted to make sure that we had that clarification
yeah.
out there. All right, the Royals will resume play tonight at 9:10. They start a 3-game series with the Mariners in Seattle. By the way, John, thanks for texting me and then sending that link to that story that helped with that discussion. The Royals
yeah.
are, and like I said, I would have had more research and planned better had I known we were going to go
yeah.
that route. But sometimes we have this show, we and I'm guilty, obviously, I'm the one that took it there because I just started thinking about Olathe Herod Christian going,
yeah.
Blake could have an amazing volleyball season and might not still be good enough to win a title because of a super loaded private school. And that's happened in various
sports. Smith Center would have won it the year before.
That's right.
They actually did win it.
The year after.
If they wouldn't have to play Olathe Herod Christian.
I know people in Smith Center tied to the volleyball program were, I think they might have had a party when
they
heard
sure
Olathe Herod
Christian
was going
yeah.
up to 3A. And I think Beloit and everybody in 3A would be okay. Herod Christian went back to 2A,
mm-hmm.
you know? Or just push them to 4A. That's fine
oh, yeah.
too, right? With a modifier, that might happen. Who knows? The Royals back in action. 3-game set against the Mariners. Royals are 41-88. Mariners 71-56. Bobby Witt Jr. needs 4 home runs in the next 32 games to become the first Royals player in their franchise history with a 30-30 season. 30 homers, 30 stolen bases. He has a chance to have 30 homers and 45 stolen bases. If he really wants to go crazy, he could be 30-50, get 13 more stolen bases. Add to his numbers so his price goes up and his value goes up down the line. That's, of course, we've talked about that. The Mariners are red hot. They're right there in the race for the AL West. The Astros got beat by 16 runs yesterday, and the Rangers have lost, I believe, 7 in a row. So all of a sudden, the Mariners, it's a 3-way rise. In fact, I don't have the standings pulled up in front of me, but the Mariners, I believe,
are they like
a half game or a
game
and
like
a half?
They're like a half game behind Houston, who's like a game and a half behind Texas, I think, something
so
like that.
So they're 2 games
yeah.
out of first
yeah,
is what the Mariners
around,
are?
Yeah, because Texas, I think it was 72-54.
Yeah, so the Rays are only 2 games out of first. Baltimore is in first place, so that's a close race. Minnesota, only winning team in the Central. They have a 6-game lead over Cleveland. And then Texas has a 1-game lead over Seattle and a 1-game lead over Houston.
So Houston must have lost last night.
Well, I told you they lost by 16
oh, yeah,
runs,
yeah, okay,
17-1
yeah,
to
yeah.
Boston. Texas lost 7 in a row. The Rangers are 2-8 in their last 10 games. The Mariners are 8-2 in the last 10. The Mariners gained 6 games in the standings in the last 10 games. That's 3 teams within a game of first place.
Yeah, so the Rangers lost. I hadn't seen
yeah,
what the
lost.
Rangers did either.
They
so,
lost.
Yeah, that's why they're both
mm-hmm.
1 game back. And I looked at the records before all the stuff happened last night.
So we got, what, 3 wild cards and 3 division winners, right? They go to the playoffs?
Yep.
So right now, it's going to be Tampa Bay is going to be one of the wild cards if they don't come back and win the division. And then Seattle, Houston, and Toronto and Boston. Those are the four going for the last two, basically. And the NL, Braves have a 13.5 game lead over the Phillies. The Brewers up 3 games on the Cubs. The Dodgers have a 12 game lead over Arizona. Dodgers are red hot. They're smoking. Mookie Betts is on fire right now when it comes to all that. In regards to the wild card standings, as I mentioned, there's basically four teams vying for three spots in the wild card: Tampa Bay, Seattle, Houston, and Toronto. Oh, actually, there's five if you count Boston. And then the NL, this is insane. Have you seen the NL wild card? You've got the Phillies, the Cubs, the D-backs, the Giants. D-backs won five in a row. Giants, the Reds, and Miami Marlins. You have six teams within 2 games of each other for the wild card spots. Technically, the Phillies are up 2.5. So there's 4.5 games that spread between the top wildcard team and the last team fighting for the position. And the Padres, if they get red hot and go on a win streak, maybe they can make a run here. But so Miami, Cincinnati, San Francisco, Arizona, and the Cubs, all those five teams are within 2.5 games of one another. That is called – you don't think the wild card's good for baseball? Think about this. If you had no wild card, what would you have right now? If you had no wild card, all you would have right now to be looking at would be Orioles and Rays, the Twins and Command. You'd have the AL West, and you'd have the NL Central, and that's it.
Yeah.
You would have a lot less races and be interested in baseball. I'll just never forget Bob Costas was all against the wild card. This is the proof. I know he's come around, but
credit the man, he has admitted he was wrong.
Yes, he did. But he admitted he was wrong. That's right. We're all wrong at some point. All right, we end with this. Steven Strasburg was the number one pick in 2009. Made his major debut with the Nationals in 2010. He went 7 innings, struck out 14, and didn't walk a batter. His major league debut. I remember the hype around him at San Diego State.
It was insane.
Scott Boras was his agent. In 2019, Steven Strasburg threw 3 scoreless innings in relief of the wild card game, and he got the win. He went 4-0 in 5 starts in the Division Series, the Championship Series, and the World Series combined. In that postseason in 2019, we talk about how dominant Madison Bumgarner was back in 14. But in 2019, Steven Strasburg was 5-0 in the playoffs. ERA was under 2. He struck out 47 and he walked 4 in 36 and a third innings. He won the World Series MVP. And if there's an MVP for the entire playoffs, he would easily won that as well. And that's a guy, you know, not playing every single day, dominant pitcher. But since he won the World Series MVP in 2019, he's made 8 starts. Hasn't pitched since June 9th, 2022. Well, he's calling it a career because of he's got nerve damage, and it's a shame. And, you know, you think about Bo Jackson. You think about Derrick Rose. And for me, right off the top of my head, Bo Jackson, Derrick Rose. Obviously, Steven Strasburg would be a guy. You know, great players, great athletes that won't make the Hall of Fame probably in their sports, but would have had they not been hurt.
Yeah.
Now, and even George Brett, his numbers would be way better in all the games he missed due to injury. And he's still a Hall of Famer and put up great numbers. Ken Griffey Jr. probably would put up more numbers. He got banged up. He always played as hard as he could, too. So I always respected that. But over his 13-year career, Steven Strasburg was a 3-time All-Star, 113-62, ERA of 3.24. He struck out 1,723 batters in 1,470 innings. Now, before you start crying and feeling sorry for Steven Strasburg, and it does suck because his career is over and it's not something he could really control. He was one of the most dominant pitchers during his time, especially in 2019. He was a phenom coming to the Nationals. He is in the fourth year of a 7-year, $245 million contract. All this money, this is why Major League Baseball contracts are big, and this is why people may say, okay, do we get Bobby Witt Jr. a ton of money? Because what happens if he blows out his ACL tomorrow? This is the problem with baseball contracts. NFL contracts aren't fully guaranteed. That's why you want to get your guaranteed money up front, your signing bonus, blah, blah, blah. Steven Strasburg is in the fourth year of a 7-year contract. Do you think the Nationals just rip up the contract when he retires?
No.
That's not how it works. Steven Strasburg will continue to be paid $35 million on an annual basis through 2026, with about $11.5 million deferred each year. He then receives $26.5 million in 2027, 2028, and 2029 in his owed deferred payments. The contract, according to sources, was not insured, leaving the Nats on the hook for the entire $245 million. How do you not insure a $245 million contract?
Dude that has injury history.
Right.
Like a history you were really, really, really slow easing him in and put him on.
Well, they shut him down when they won 98 games that 1 year, and the people are like, how could you do that?
Yeah. And when you've done that and you get a guy that you're worried about at the front end of his career, why would you be like, okay, we're at the back end now, you've played since 2010, you're going into your 10th season in the league and have been really good, but that we're not going to insure this 7-year contract that we're giving.
And I'm going to tell you this. Sometimes I think we've got to really, you know, we go off of what people say and write and whatever else, and we hope that it's factual. I'm going to tell you that I call suspect on that report, because how are you? I mean, you can't afford the insurance on a $245 million contract. Why would you, especially the guy with injury history, as you just said? I don't care if the guy has never been hurt. You give a big contract like that, take out the insurance. These owners have the money to do it.
Yeah.
So I call suspect on that report that I just read, and that's why I brought it up, because I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I don't believe the Nationals would not insure a contract of that magnitude. 7 years, $245 million. With a guy that had injury history, so much so that they shut him down when they were going to the playoffs that 1 year. So I don't think that's truthful or factual. But I also
I'm with you a little bit, but I'm like, what's the benefit of coming out and saying that it's not insured for either, like the either party, like the Nationals or the person
I don't
you know what I'm saying?
Somebody might have misspoke, somebody misheard something, or who knows what people do with their so-called sources.
Yeah,
yeah. But I just don't believe it. I don't believe that they would have not insured that. Just like I don't believe that Donald Trump weighs 215 pounds. Sorry, I don't care if you love Trump or not. I've seen pictures, unless he's been on a great workout regimen and he's lost 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 pounds. I don't think the former president is 215 pounds. Now, you can yell at me and scream at me because I believe that. Well, guess what? I see pictures and I see athletes that are the same weight. I know how much I weigh and how tall I am. And I'm going to say right now that I don't think that's true. And I don't think that it's true that the Strasburg contract was not insured. I just call suspect on this one. One, I feel a lot stronger about than the other of which one is true.
I'm with you on that. Yeah.
At least I have pictures the back of the one.
Exactly.
You know, but like I said, maybe he's cut out his sugars and his fried foods and his drinking, and you can lose quite a bit of weight. You cut out those type of things. It's, you know, I want to see a picture right now of exactly, you know, and then I'll tell you if I believe he's 215. I can just tell you previous pictures, no way in hell he's 215. But if you give me a picture now and he's the trim down, listen, I saw somebody not too long ago that lost like 50 pounds and looked like I didn't even recognize him for a moment. So it is possible. I just need the picture of the side by side and the proof to say, what's he look like today? Okay, I'll buy the 215. But if I go off previous photos, no way in heck can I buy that. But you wouldn't buy that either if somebody you hadn't seen in years, they were really big and overweight, and then, you know, 5 years later, a reunion, you see them and not realize they lost 100 pounds, you wouldn't believe it either until you saw it.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever. All I know is I'm not 215. And I'm not 6'3 either.
I'm not 215 either, so.
We have a friend of ours, well, former employee, that put out on social media, he's like, okay, if he weighs 215 and I'm dating this hot supermodel and I'm going to dump her in a few months, I'm like, yeah, none of that's believable, Jason. Have a great weekend, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.